Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
There are too many people who happily embrace Madiba's legacy of racial reconciliation, but passionately resist even modest reforms that would challenge chronic poverty and growing inequality. There are too many leaders who claim solidarity with Madiba's struggle for freedom, but do not tolerate dissent from their own people.
Como símbolo supremo de dignidad y de consagración inclaudicable a la lucha revolucionaria por la libertad y la justicia.
Today is one of the low points in a low presidency. Welcome to the Savage Nation. The man goes to a funeral attended by world leaders and a rock and roll singer who is sort of the zealot of politics. Bono is the zealot of politics, sticking his stupid face and eyeglasses wherever powerful people meet. I don't know what Bono was doing there, but let's put that aside. Obama goes to Mandela's funeral and poses in a selfie that teenage girls take with goofy big teeth showing and takes a picture of himself with the beautiful president of Denmark while Mrs. Obama sits there grimly to his side. And if you look carefully at the pictures from the New York Daily News on MichaelSavage.com, you'll be shocked to see the faces of the African leaders around Obama as he is acting like a child, a narcissistic child, snapping pictures of himself at the funeral. But it gets worse. Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, it gets even worse. Another low was achieved today by this low presidency. He bowed down to the Cuban dictator, the Hitler of Cuba, Raul Castro. Raul Castro may be wearing a business suit, but he's a murderous thug running a police state with concentration camps and death squads, and Obama bowed down to him and shook his hands. Have you experienced life in South Africa? Have you lived in South Africa? What were your experiences in South Africa? Because we're going to talk about, let us say, the truth about Mandela, which has been overlooked with all of this worship turning him into a saint. He was not a saint. He was not a saint. Amid this tsunami of praise and adoration was, after all, a man who was flawed. But more than flawed, there are things about Mandela that you must know. Before the show is over, you will know it because we'll have an expert on about the real Mandela. And as expected, the communist media has turned the funeral for Nelson Mandela into a circus. And I mean the worldwide socialist / communist media. Our president, who takes every excuse to grab attention for himself, was there in full self-aggrandizing glory. As I said, he even took the time to snap an adolescent selfie or self-portrait with the prime ministers of Denmark and Britain during the service. Literally, I shouldn't say gaping at, but sort of gaping at the prime minister of Denmark, the beautiful blonde leader of Denmark, like a kid trying to pick someone up at a nightclub, with his wife sitting nearby, stoically looking on at the services. It's unbelievable to me. Comparing Mandela to our founding fathers, however, is like saying America's founding fathers were communists. They were not. They were not communists, while Mandela was a communist. And if you ignore the violence and the terror that South Africa went through by hands of his African National Congress, then you're rewriting history. Should we ignore the legacy of murder, rape, and violence that now plagues South Africa, the South Africa that he fought for? I will give you the statistics and the facts, and you can come to your own conclusion. But I'm going to ask you again two questions. How do you feel about such a narcissist leading the free world, so to speak? How do you feel about Obama snapping a selfie of himself at a funeral, smiling as though he's sort of on his own planet? What does it tell you about Obama as a president? Does it explain why the country that we live in is in such turmoil? And if you've lived in South Africa, what are your experiences? Do you want to share them on the Savage Nation? Then we go to the Obama-Castro handshake. Like several other major media outlets, USA Today tried to frame Obama's handshake with Raul Castro, the communist dictator of Cuba, as a respectful nod to Mandela's legacy of reconciliation with recent historical precedent. But one of the many truths about Mandela conveniently ignored by the media was his support for Fidel Castro and Castro's communist dictatorship. His dictatorship was not benign. Castro shot his opposition, put them in prison for over 35 years. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about our commander-in-chief bowing down and shaking the hands of this Hitler of Cuba? Obama had no problem dealing with Iran behind everyone's backs, trying to broker a nuclear deal. Who is to say that a secret deal is not in the works with communist Cuba? Were you outraged by this nod to Castro? Do you fear that just as with Iran, some backroom deal will empower Cuba, as if they are now an ally? Now, while you're calling me at 855-407-282, I'd like to play a clip from CNN and MSNBC where they shrugged off Obama's bowing to the dictator of Cuba. Listen to clip number one.
Castro, he's shaking hands with Raul Castro.
Is it just about the moment?
This was not something that was pre-planned.
You shake hands out of respect for the moment and move on.
A human moment. Yes.
President Obama just shook hands with Raul Castro.
That's silly season. That's
the funeral of Nelson Mandela.
This is a moment of reconciliation.
President Obama just shook hands with Raul Castro.
You're really going to expect President Obama to snub Raul Castro in front of cameras?
How do you feel about this president, who is so weak around dictators that he bows down to them, but like a dictator himself to the American people? He will shake hands with Raul Castro and not with John Boehner. He will shake hands with Raul Castro and spit on the Tea Party. He will shake hands with Raul Castro and spit on his opposition in this country. He will bow down to the Iranian murderers who are seeking a nuclear weapon to wipe out the Jews of Israel and spit on the American people here. He will not shake the hands of his opposition here while shaking the hands of the opposition to humanity there. How do you feel about this? If you feel nothing, then you're dead. You shouldn't even listen to the show. You have no right to listen to my show. You're wasting me. You're wasting my genius if you're listening to this show, if you don't even know what I'm talking about. I'm outraged by this. I'm just controlling it. It's getting worse by the day. When you see a picture of Obama posing with a cell phone in his hand, an iPhone, snapping a picture with the blonde president of Denmark while his wife stoically looks on at the casket and the funeral and the services. That's all you need to know about Obama. It's a child thrown into the presidency. A man who was never made for the presidency. A man who had the presidency foisted upon him by far more powerful figures. 855-407-282. 855-407-282. Did you live in South Africa? What was it like? Have you ever been in South Africa? What is it like? What are the statistics in South Africa under Mandela? What do you know about Mandela? I have the data, and you have to know about it. And I realize that many of you don't want to know the truth, because the truth is very painful. Frederick on KSFO, go ahead, please.
Yeah, listen, I've been a permanent resident of South Africa since 1977. I have a successful business there. It's a mixed bag. I had some of my property seized by gangs, but Mandela's not a communist. He only got support from Castro and the Russians because we wouldn't support him. It was Jimmy Carter that changed the support of the United States. And the United States is...
So, in other words, if we had dealt with him when he was a communist, he would have been a good communist?
Oh.
Well, what you're saying is we drove him to become a communist, is what you're saying.
No, he's not a communist now. We drove
him. That is correct. But wasn't he a communist in the beginning?
No, he was not. He's never been a communist.
What do you mean, no, he was not? He was a member of the Communist Party. Frederick, you're rewriting history.
The African Communist Party is a triangular relationship between COSATU, the ANC, and the SACP. He is not a member of the Communist Party.
Well, I understand that currently he was not a member of the Communist Party. But it's a well-known fact that in his early days he was a member of the Communist Party. Well, he also espoused violence. He also did not tell his people not to follow violence. Do you know that as well?
What's this now? South Africa's always been a violent country. Under apartheid, it was violence. Whenever you have a lot of poor people and rich people...
Oh, it's poverty that drives people to violence. I was once poor. I didn't carjack and rape and break into houses. How's that possible?
Well, yeah, because you had an avenue in your education system.
Well, who gave me the education? Someone gave it to me? My 15 years of education were given to me? Or I struggled and worked two jobs? Don't give me that left-wing excuse that it's the poverty that causes violence. I've heard that crap in my country since I'm 10 years old. I grew up with poor people, and none of them did carjackings, none of them broke into houses, none of them raped, and none of them murdered. I don't want to hear any more about poverty. My people worked their way out of poverty. They didn't carjack their way out of poverty. I'm sick of this. And I didn't want to get angry today, but I knew the minute I told you one scintilla of the truth about Nelson Mandela and the real South Africa, I knew the minute I said it, the real communists of the Americas would call this program and start accusing me of saying things I never said. At 30 minutes after this hour, you're going to hear from a man who really knows the truth about Mandela. Alex Newman is the foreign correspondent at The New American. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
A boy raised herding cattle and tutored by the elders of the Thembu tribe, Madiba would emerge as the last great liberator of the 20th century. Like Gandhi, he would lead a resistance movement. A movement that at its start had little prospect for success. Like Dr. King, he would give potent voice to the claims of the oppressed and the moral necessity.
Hurry, turn it off. It sounds like Animal Farm to me. I mean, this is like the Animal Farm funeral. I can't take it anymore. You know, it's one thing to go on and on about the good he did, but stop already glossing everything over. The man was not a saint, that's all. He was a great man and a statesman, as I said last week. Obama is the opposite. Obama is a small man and a politician. To pose for a selfie at the funeral is a picture that will live forever. A funeral for a man that he says is a great man. He takes a picture of himself with an iPhone, posing with the blonde president of Denmark, while his wife sits there staring in horror. And then look at the faces of the Africans around him. What a mockery he is of a president, this man. And then he bows down to a Cuban dictator. Shakes the hand of a murderer, a Hitler. A Hitler! Raul Castro is a worse Hitler than his brother. Ask the Cubans if you don't know what's really going on there. Ask the Cubans what's really going on there. This man knows no bounds to his inability to comprehend how he is seen in the world. It's disgusting, frankly. I could ask you how you feel, and I know how you feel, and I'll take your calls, but we have an odd call just now that I didn't think would happen. Bob in Florida on WBOB. Bob, welcome to the program. What is this call about?
Yes, Dr. Savage. I'm a fan for many years now, and you've had a numerologist on your show. Two or three times I've heard him, and I believe the last time I heard him, it was about 2 years ago. And he makes predictions, and you commented that many of his predictions he makes comes true. Well, he predicted at that time something big in your life was going to happen within 2 years. And you were seeing concerned. He says, oh, my God, what is it? I'm not going to die. And he says, no, I don't know what it is, but it's going to change your whole life. Things so big, I can't tell you exactly what it is.
Oh, so you're saying when I move in scarcely 3 weeks to prime time on the biggest stations in the country is what that numerologist was predicting?
Yes, sir. That's it.
Well, thank you for being such a loyal listener. 855-407-282. Beverly on WABC. What's your topic? Go ahead, please.
Hi, how you doing? I just wanted to let you know that they were saying on the news that the president did not take that selfie. He was pulled into the picture by the president of Denmark, and that's why Michelle was like, you know, she didn't like it.
Really? Have you seen the picture itself in today's New York Daily News?
No, I did not.
Okay, ma'am. It sounds like you're a person who wants to know what's really going on, and you're fair-minded. Just take a look at the picture of Obama and see if he looks like he was pulled into the picture. His wife is sitting there stoically in shock. Everyone around them, from Africans to European leaders, are sitting there stone-faced at a funeral for a, you know, a world leader. And there is Obama goofing around like a schoolboy, smiling. He doesn't look like he was pulled into the picture.
They reported, so...
The Daily News says, and the Daily News is a left-wing, you know, Democrat newspaper. President Obama was caught committing a funeral faux pas, they wrote, snapping a selfie during Nelson Mandela's memorial service with Danish Prime Minister Helge Thorning-Schmidt and British PM David Cameron. They didn't say he was pulled into it. In fact, the follow-up picture shows stone-faced people all around him, a wife sitting there pissed off, and him goofing around with a blonde next to him holding her hand, like in a movie theater. Sorry, you can't rewrite history on this show. 855-400-7282. 855-400-SAVAGE. It's a big day, believe me. Obama will not learn from Mandela. He's incapable of it. He doesn't have what they used to call gravitas a number of years ago. That was a word that went around the media for a while. They all used it. And then it ran out of, went out of fashion. And you know, I generally try to avoid, first of all, I'm an Obama carefree show. I won't talk about it. I find it's done all day long. I'm tired of it. I try not to bash Obama because I find that limiting, boring. It limits me if I do it. I can't expand my mind if I'm just drilling down on someone, whether it's the president or someone else. My mind closes down. It doesn't make me bigger. It makes me smaller. So I try not to do it. But if you don't look at these pictures, I heard about it, then I went to the New York Daily News site, and the pictures are shocking, actually. I put them up on my website, michaelsavage.com. Go to either one. He was not pulled into a picture. The Danish leader looked ill at ease with Obama during the remembrance ceremony for Nelson Mandela, but Michelle Obama, right, did not seem to approve the display. Oh, she looked all at ease. She's got her legs crossed. The blonde Danish leader of Denmark, all smiles, legs crossed, in full flirt mode, and there's Obama in full peacock mode, putting on a full male display for her, and his wife is immediately to his left, just staring at the Danish prime minister, as women will understand, and in front of him, take a look at the stone faces of the African leaders. This is a display that should be remembered through history. It explains everything.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282.
Like America's founding fathers, he would erect a constitutional order to preserve freedom for future generations, a commitment to democracy and rule of law, ratified not only by his election, but by his...
All right, we get it. It's a eulogy. You'd expect this, flowery things. The reason that we have to talk about Mandela's true legacy is because he was a man, not a saint. And you cannot let people become saints in your own lifetime. It's very dangerous to do so. I asked people to call if they lived in South Africa. We had one who said it's not so bad. Now we have another from another side. Stan in Las Vegas on KBET, fire away, or on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Yes, I'm just appalled that nobody's really talking about this man who is really a Timothy McVeigh on a mega scale. We're talking about while he was military commander of the ANC, looking at about 21,000 deaths from 46 to 1962. We're talking about a man, consider the fact that there's no way in hell that we would allow nuclear weapons to fall in this man's hands. And that's why that, even though South Africa had a joint program and supplied 550 tons of uranium, that we made sure that the nuclear weapons that we had did not fall into this man's hand. And I'm just appalled. I'm very disappointed that you show any admiration at all for this guy, like a Timothy McVeigh on a large scale. 221 acts of sabotage and... And this is cowardly. This is not a freedom fighter like George Washington. This is bombings and sabotage and killing cowardly in a cowardly manner.
All right. Well, you made your point, and that was, of course, what he was in the beginning. Didn't he modify his stances as he aged? To the man's credit, he only served one term. He didn't become, like Mugabe, a dictator for life. He stepped down after one term, to his credit, didn't he?
You can say that appearances are deceiving.
Well, he stepped down after one term, which is something I wish Obama had done. then the country might be safe for democracy.
I mean, I think
if the man who takes selfies as his, at his funeral would have stepped down after one term and hung around with Bono and Katzenberg, he would be a happier man, and the country might be safer. Thanks for the call. Now let's go to a man who I think has a less biased view about Mandela. Alex Newman is the foreign correspondent at The New American and a reporter for the great website WND. Alex, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
So the last caller was very negative on Mandela. He called him a Timothy McVeigh. You wouldn't characterize him like that, would you?
You know, it's difficult to say things like that about a person who's died now. But I think at the same time, we have a responsibility to the truth to acknowledge what he did. I mean, you know, Obama compared him to the Founding Fathers. The Founding Fathers fought like honorable men as troops against other troops. What Mandela and his people were engaged in was nothing of the sort. This was terrorism. This was killing women and children, primarily blacks, ironically. And I mean, that's...
Wait, I don't understand that. Why would Mandela's ANC and their violent gang, why would they target other black people?
Well, I mean, the image that's been created about South Africa at this point is so different from the reality on the ground. I lived there for some time. I'm very familiar with South Africa. And... I mean, okay, so Mandela was a communist. This has now been admitted by the South African Communist Party, by the ANC. And these acts of terrorism, why were they perpetrated against blacks? Well, the biggest reason is because blacks did not support the takeover or the communist takeover of South Africa. They did not.
So you mean the black residents in South Africa who didn't want to go in that direction were then targeted by Mandela and his goons?
That's exactly right. I mean... The ANC, you know, it wasn't always a communist organization. It was kind of taken over in 1928 is when it started happening. But, there was huge, huge constituencies of blacks opposed to the ANC. So we don't need to defend apartheid to say that, what Mandela did, what his people did, was terrorism. I mean, you can talk about fighting an oppressive system, that's fine. But when you bring it to killing women and children, when you bring it to this thing they called necklacing, Winnie Mandela, his ex-wife, used to boast about how we were going to liberate South Africa.
Yeah, now that's very important. His wife, was she imprisoned for her necklacing, Winnie Mandela? This woman, I was shocked to see, has been rehabilitated and was at the funeral. She was an open advocate for one of the most brutal murder tactics ever conceived by man, you write, pioneered by the African National Congress. The so-called necklacing involved filling a tire with gasoline before putting it around the victim's neck, setting it ablaze, and watching the poor target slowly writhe in horrifying agony before eventual death. Most of the ANC's necklace victims were fellow blacks. That's unbelievable. Was she ever jailed for this?
No, she wasn't, and it's all documented in the Truth and Reconciliation Committee. I mean, this is well-documented fact that she participated in these murders, she encouraged these murders. They were directed at blacks. I mean, one of them was a 14-year-old girl. And now she's still on the leadership committee of the ANC. So, to suggest that these people are some kind of freedom fighters like our founding fathers, I think is very, very dishonest. And Obama really is...
Well, let's look at this from a different perspective. When he took power, forget about his past, he could have engaged in a bloodbath and a mass slaughter in South Africa, along the lines of Zimbabwe's Mugabe, couldn't he?
I suppose he could have, yeah. But, I mean, I don't think it's a reasonable... I've heard a lot of people using this defense of Mandela, saying, well, he didn't exterminate the whites when he took power. I mean, first of all, that assumes that that's a normal, logical thing to do.
I'm sorry, right. That's true. That does follow as a possible logical follow, yes.
And I mean, what you know, he did step down as his first term, as you mentioned when the last caller was on. But he knew he was secure in the knowledge that his minions and the people he was working with, the South African Communist Party, the ANC, all of which were backed by the Soviet Union, by Mao in communist China. These are some of the biggest mass murderers in the history of the world.
Mao Zedong praised Nelson Mandela.
Are you kidding? The ANC went over to Beijing and personally met with Mao Zedong and with the people in Moscow, and they all...
Oh, my God. Mao Zedong was the worst butcher of the last century. Over 30 million fellow Chinese were killed by that madman.
That's right. And see, this is the history that people don't know. And it's important that people do know this history. And I think it also says something about the times we're living in here. They're, like you said, they're making him into a saint. But reality is so far away from this image. So if the media can pull this off, I mean, what can't they pull off? What else?
That's right. That is absolutely what worries me. If they can make Mandela into a saint, and they can let Obama get away with posing for a selfie at a funeral and say that the woman, the Danish prime minister, did it, not him, they can do anything. They can twist anything. They can make reality unreality. They can make hate love, love hate, war peace, peace love, the truth lies, and the lies truth. So let's talk about some more of the truths about this gentleman, Nelson Mandela. Today, the president did something astonishing. He ordered American flags to be flown at half-mast until Monday with an executive order. Is that shocking?
I think it's a disgrace. And, you know, people don't even seem to be realizing the significance of this. We are honoring a guy who was a communist and who was a terrorist. He admitted, he confessed to 156 public acts of violence, including the Church Street bombings. They put bombs and they killed 19 people, women and children, injured another 200. And now our flags are flying at half-mast to acknowledge an admitted communist and an admitted terrorist. So, you know, we don't have to rip Mandela apart, but it's important that people know the truth about this stuff. And now our flags are flying at half-mast. So,
So let me ask you protocol. Is it typical, is it traditional for American flags to be ordered to fly at half-mast when a world leader dies? Or is this a unique situation?
You know, I've never heard of it happening before, so...
Okay, that's interesting. We'll have to research that. Mandela was not an American. I don't know what the flags are at half-staff for. Not everybody likes communists in America. But you know what's an even bigger story to me, Alex Newman? We're speaking with Alex Newman, foreign correspondent at the New American, reporter for WorldNet Daily. We'll learn more about what's going on in South Africa today, Jacob Zuma, the fourth leader of the so-called Rainbow Nation, etc. What's even more interesting to me is I would gauge, you know, reading what I see going on, do you think that the young people in the world even know who Nelson Mandela is?
No, they don't. They have this entirely fictional image of the man. And, I mean, you know, they pull little quotes here and there to make him seem like a good guy. But they have no idea about the history of this guy. They don't know who he was. They don't know what he did. I mean, sometimes people just, you know, when you explain to them who he was, they don't even believe it until they go out and research it themselves. But this is all in the record. This is all in the historical record. There's no speculation here.
I don't want to play devil's advocate, but the truth is that if you were a black man in Africa at his time and you felt strongly about freedom, wouldn't you have joined him?
No, for several reasons. The first being what we just discussed. You know, I don't think murder of women and children is appropriate under any circumstances. I'm not somebody who subscribes to the idea that the ends justify the means, so I don't think...
Okay, that's very important to say.
...these kinds of acts. And then, and I think it's, you know, most people don't really know what apartheid was either. So I don't think it's good to defend apartheid. I don't think it was a good system. It was, I think, in many ways a racist system and an oppressive system. But at the same time... You know, the UN declared it to be a crime against humanity. This was a resolution introduced by the Soviet Union and immediately supported by all the communist mass murderers of the world. So what was...
You mean the same communist mass murderers who now say Israel is an apartheid state, worse than Nazi Germany?
Yeah, and I mean, that's, you know, another example of this kind of ridiculous extremism. I mean, apartheid was not a nice system. I'm not going to defend it. But at the same time, I think it's important to keep it in perspective. I mean, one of the goals, and people might agree with this, people might not, but one of the goals of the apartheid system, and this is part of the historical record again, was to grant independence to all these different African groups. So, you know, South Africa is a lot of different tribes and ethnicities, the Afrikaners, the descendants of the Dutch being one. And the idea was, you know, we'll create these independent homelands for all these different groups. Four of the groups had already achieved full sovereignty by the time apartheid was coming down. The most horrible elements of the system were being...
What was apartheid? Can you explain it in a few sentences? What was apartheid?
Literally, it means just separate development. The idea was that, you know, the Xhosas can stay by themselves and rule themselves, the Zulus. And, I mean, a lot of these tribes had been warring with each other for a very long time, way before, you know, Europeans came and did anything 300-400 years ago. And so the idea was, you know, separate development. We'll keep the Xhosas, they can have their own kingdom, the Zulus can have their own kingdom, And the idea was to create 11 different homelands for all these different tribes. And part of the system was, you know, quite oppressive. So black people weren't able to, for example, start businesses. They weren't able to marry a white woman, for example. So you had a lot of really oppressive race-based racist legislation like this. And I don't think it's something that should be defended. But at the same time, I mean, when people draw comparisons to what Hitler did, for example, or what Stalin did, it's not even in the same ballpark. I mean, we're talking about apples to oranges here. Apartheid wasn't good, but nothing.
It wasn't as bad as. I get it. Alex, I have another question for you. Who are the historic occupants of the land known as South Africa today? Before the white farmers, the Dutch farmers came there, who was residing there?
See, that you just hit on another really important point, and this is another big part of the myth that's been created surrounding the whole South African narrative. South Africa, when the Europeans started arriving there 400, 500 years ago, was pretty desolate. I mean, the first census records we have from the 1800s showed 1 million whites and 1 million blacks. And even during apartheid, you had blacks fleeing from all over the rest of Africa, partly, admittedly, because there was communist terrorist regimes ruling their countries. So they were fleeing to South Africa. They were fleeing into apartheid. I don't want to sound like I'm defending apartheid, but if you look at what's been going on in Africa for the last 100 years, apartheid probably had the best human rights record of any government on the continent. They had rule of law, they had fair courts, etc.
Well, you mean compared with the surrounding nations? But I want to go again to 400 or 500 years ago. Was this occupied by tribes, or was it a desolate, unoccupied area for some reason?
When the Europeans started arriving there, the Dutch and the French, it was mostly Bushmen who lived around there. And then some of the tribes started migrating south from, you know, Central Africa near the area of Uganda. So the tribes started migrating south, and then maybe 100, a little bit more years ago, they started coming faster because South Africa was developing very quickly. There was jobs, there was employment opportunities, there wasn't communist terror regimes or warlords running everything. And so, I mean, they had, you know, the blacks there had the highest income on the continent by far. They had high income.
Wow. You wouldn't know that listening
anywhere
to
in the world, with the exception.
You certainly wouldn't know that looking at the American media. We're speaking with Alex Newman, is the foreign correspondent at the New American Reporter for WND. When we come back, we'll talk about the current situation in South Africa for blacks and for whites, right here on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
And while I will always fall short of Madiba's example, he makes me want to be a better man. He speaks to what's best inside us. After this great liberator is laid to rest, and when we've returned to our cities and villages and rejoined our daily routines, let us search for his strength. Let us search for his largeness of spirit somewhere inside of ourselves.
Would Mandela have taken a selfie with a blackberry of him and a blonde lady at a funeral for another world leader? I don't know. I kind of doubt it. If Mandela had gone to the funeral of another world leader, would he ever have been caught smiling with a blonde while his wife was sitting next to him? I would expect that Winnie would have necklaced the other woman, but let's put that aside. It's an embarrassment. It's disrespectful, and we paid for that trip. It is a nightmare that's getting worse. Let's take a quick caller and then go back to Alex Newman. Aaron in San Diego, welcome to the Savage Nation. Make your point, please.
Sure. Thanks for having me on the show. You mentioned earlier that you had worked and educated yourself out of poverty. I think what you missed there is that blacks in South Africa at that time didn't have the opportunity to work their way out or educate their way out.
Okay. Do people in America today have the opportunity to work their way out of poverty, or they're stuck in it?
No, I think most people absolutely do.
Okay, I just wanted to know where you were coming from. Let's go to Alex. Alex, how would you answer Aaron's statement that blacks at that time had no chance to work their way out of poverty? Is that a rational statement, a reasonable statement?
Well, first of all, it's untrue. Again, I don't want to defend apartheid. I don't think apartheid was a good system. I heard it described today as socialism for blacks and capitalism for whites, and I think that's a good description. But the fact is, before apartheid fell, you had not a huge number, but you had a sizable number of blacks who actually earned above the average income of whites. And I was just on the phone today with the head of the Free Market Foundation in Johannesburg, and he was an anti-apartheid activist. He hated the system. He wants liberty. And he was explaining this to me. He's a very honest man, and and that's the case. It wasn't a good system. I wouldn't defend it. I wouldn't dream of defending it. But it's just flat out untrue that, you know, blacks were permanently stuck in their misery. Again, I don't think it was a good system. It's probably good that it fell. I don't know that what replaced it is better.
Alex, what's coming in South Africa now that Mandela is gone? Is it going to revert to the barbarism of Zimbabwe?
It's a good question, and you get really different answers depending on who you talk to. But I think probably one of the world's foremost authorities, Dr. Gregory Stanton, he's the head of Genocide Watch, probably one of the most respected experts on genocide in the world, if not the top expert. He went on a fact-finding mission last year, and, I mean, this is really, you know, what sealed the deal for me. And when he said this, I knew, my suspicions were correct and the suspicions of a lot of other people were correct. There is a movement, there is an organized effort in South Africa right now among extremists, communists, black nationalists, and others to exterminate the white population. They have friends in very high places, and I think framing this as a racial issue is not a good idea. I mean, this isn't just, you know, blacks hate whites because they were former oppressors, etc. This is really part of a broader agenda. And that is to impose total tyranny on South Africa, total communist tyranny. But I do think that the whites there have...
Where are the nuclear weapons that South Africa currently possesses? Who's in charge of them?
My understanding is that they were dismantled before 1994, beforehand.
Alex, could you stay over the top of the hour to continue our discussion of South Africa today?
Absolutely.
All right. Alex Newman, foreign correspondent, New American, reporter for WND. More on the truth about Mandela and South Africa.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
And like America's founding fathers, he would erect a constitutional order to preserve freedom for future generations, a commitment to democracy and rule of law. Ratified not only by his election, but by his willingness to step down from power after only one term.
Oh, if only you had followed Mandela's lead. God, we'd be in a better shape. Anybody but Obama. To take a selfie there at the funeral, basically gushing over a blonde leader of another country while his wife sits grimly looking at the services. It's unbelievable. It says everything. We're talking about the funeral for Nelson Mandela. And the disgrace that Obama has made of himself and for America in his behavior, behaving like an adolescent child at a funeral. It's unbelievable to me. We're talking about him shaking the hands with the Hitler of Cuba. Make no mistake about it. You may think that this is just high-flying rhetoric, that Raul Castro's a nice old guy in a nice suit. He's a murderer. He is a murderer. He runs a prison camp. The Cubans in Cuba live in a prison camp. And Obama took the time to shake his hand. Today, Obama, through an executive order, ordered that all flags in America fly at half-staff, which is shocking when you think about it. He didn't order the flags at half-staff for the 22 Navy SEALs who were executed in Afghanistan, but he orders the flags at half-staff for a non-American. It's really unbelievable. In a moment, we'll go back to our guest, Alex Newman, who's the foreign correspondent for the New American and reporter for WND, to talk about the crime in South Africa today, its relativity, and where it might go tomorrow, where people may look back and say, I wish Mandela was here to keep things under control, because that's what I think is going to happen. As flawed as Mandela's legacy may be, not in a strange way, but in a very real way, he may have kept the cork in the bottle, is what I see coming. That's what I think could happen, is the cork will come out of the bottle right now. Okay, 855-400-7282. 855-400-7282. Cyril on WFTL in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You're actually in Naples, but you're listening on FTL. Cyril, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I was born in northern Rhodesia, but I lived in Cape Town from 1935 until 1947. And I could see the writing on the wall at that point.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Many people saw the handwriting on the wall in Germany and got out. Let's jump to today, Cyril. Do you feel the same handwriting on the wall in America?
Yes.
To be very blunt, you're not alone.
I am. I carry a gun. I don't take any chances, even in Naples.
You mean in Naples, Florida, not in Naples, Italy?
Yeah.
I think even the Napoli Don carry guns in Naples.
Yeah. I was in Kenya for the Mau Mau and saw what happened there.
Oh, the Whistlers. The Whistlers with the machetes.
Yeah. I have a wound on my hip from that.
How old were you at the time that the insurrections occurred in Kenya?
I was 19.
And were you in the army, or were you just a civilian attacked by the mobs?
Yeah, we got attacked one night. We took out all, and
You could go to Brooklyn, New York, and get attacked if you'd like, or Oakland, California. It wouldn't be much different.
I lived in New York for a while too.
No, go to Brooklyn. Maybe you'll be the victim of a game called Knockout. It's not done with machetes, of course, or machine guns. There's no whistles involved, but it's sort of on the same order. It's, you know, even dwarfs started small.
Was this country much better? I was paid to go into the Congo to harass the United Nations. I also know for a fact that Hammarskjöld did not have an accident. He was shot.
Oh, the old United Nations leader, Dag Hammarskjöld, when his plane went down. Very few people remember that incident.
Yeah, I was there.
But what were you, in the army?
I was in the army at the time.
Which army, Cyril?
The Rhodesia Nyasaland Army.
So you were in Rhodesia before it became Zimbabwe, before Mugabe took it over and took the farms away from whites and gave them to other folks. And, of course, it was in a food-exporting nation. When the white farmers were farming it, it's an uncomfortable fact that today the country is a basket case.
Yes, completely.
But that doesn't stop the internationalists from saying it's still a better place because people have fairness now. See, they put, quote, fairness above starvation.
No fairness.
I think the same rhetoric is being heard in America today, where everything is calculated by the slide rule called fairness. Irrespective of the results, what's important is that there is, quote, fairness.
There isn't. There's one
tribe. We get the picture, and I don't know, Cyril, I don't know if we can survive as a free nation with three more years of this character in the White House. That's the absolute truth, and this applies to people of all races. This is not aimed at white people. It's aimed at all Americans who once thought they were free to choose whether it be a health care system. They could choose whether they wanted it or not. Now the dictator has said you must have it. This is the same character who talks about freedom in highfalutin terms at a funeral in Africa and then is overseeing the equivalent of the Stasi from the ex-Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, here in the United States of America, and does nothing to rein them in. No, Cyril, these are not good times. Let's go back right now to Alex Newman, foreign correspondent at the New American, reporter for WND. Alex, welcome back to the program. You heard the last caller talking about his view of things. He goes back a long, long way. Are you pessimistic about what might happen in South Africa going forward?
To give my honest opinion, yes, I am. I mean, the way things are shaping up, it doesn't look good. You have, the president openly singing songs calling for the mass murder of whites, of Boers.
Now, wait, which president? Where?
Oh, all of them. Mandela used to sing it. Then you have Zuma. Nowadays, he still sings it. It's even officially hate speech. It's an incitement to genocide by any standard. And they go to political rallies and they sing, shoot the boar, shoot the farmer, bring me my machine gun, as if it's just fun and games. And, you know, people dismiss it as, oh, it's just an old struggle song. They don't really want to exterminate the whites. But I think when people say they want to exterminate somebody, history shows us that we should take it seriously.
What are crime statistics in South Africa today? We know this, and it's an embarrassment, and we can't blame any one individual for this. Isn't South Africa still the child rape capital of the world? It's a terrible thing to say, but correct me if I'm mistaken in saying that.
It is the capital of a lot of horrible things, including rape and murder. I think it's number two in murders worldwide, but it's often called the murder capital of the world. And yes, child rape is very widespread. Rape of women is extremely widespread. And it affects all races, of course. It blacks killing blacks, blacks killing whites, colors are targets regularly. So it's really a universal problem. But what's happening there with the Afrikaners, I think, deserves special attention from Americans especially, but the whole world. And because what we're really talking about here is the extermination of a people, of a nation, and a nation actually that has a lot of similarities with ours. I mean, the Afrikaner people, they're, you know, different in some respects from Americans, but we have a lot of similarities in common. They were very Christian. They fled persecution in Europe. They fought mightily against the British Empire. They refused to be subjects. I mean, they have so many parallels in their history with ours. And right now, what's happening to them right now is horrible, horrible, horrible. And nobody wants to talk about it. And the government tries to cover it up. They budge.
Alex, I read in the L.A. Times, not in your writings, that there are hundreds of thousands of economically deprived Afrikaners. Those would be white people, correct? Hundreds of thousands of them living in squalid squatter camps throughout South Africa without so much as running water or electricity. Is that true?
That's 100% true, and it's came.
That there are hundreds of thousands of white Afrikaners living in squalor and squatter camps without water or electricity? I never even knew that until today.
Yeah, some estimates suggest up to 1 million. So it's.
But I guess that didn't make it to the UN's Human Rights Commission. 90% of the farms it had redistributed from whites who farmed the land for generations were given to blacks with little knowledge of farming. This is from the L.A. Times. Almost 25,000 square miles of land so far are now failing. The farms, which are active accruing revenue for the state, were handed over to people, and more than 90% of those are not functional, said Land Reform Minister Gugile Quinti. So the fact of the matter is things could get very, very much worse there.
Yeah, they're bad already. I mean, nobody wants to talk about it. Yeah, I would recommend people look into the investigation that Genocide Watch did on their fact-finding mission last year. What's going on there? I won't even describe the horrors that are happening to some of these white farmers. These are not, just regular crimes like the regime wants to suggest. These are, I mean, things so monstrous, I don't think normal people can even conceive of these things. I mean, murdering babies in the most horrific ways imaginable. And this is very widespread now. The government tries to cover it up, and they're failing. But I think...
But you would think with the whole world in South Africa, with the whole world eulogizing Nelson Mandela, perhaps even one news outlet would let one story come out about these things that we are talking about tonight? Are we not allowed to talk about these things on the Savage Nation? Is there something wrong with exposing the realities of South Africa in the midst of the whole world looking at the country today?
It makes you wonder what the real agenda is, doesn't it?
It makes you fear for the future of this country that we have no press. But that's an old story on this country. Especially when, and I'm going to tell you this, Alex, I'm the only one talking about it. All of the others on the so-called conservative side of the media are obsessed with Obamacare, while these issues of genocide and crime are not even being discussed.
It seems very politically incorrect to talk about it. I mean, a lot of people even try to justify it. They say, well, the Afrikaners did apartheid, and so then it's fine to exterminate them and to rape them and to disembowel them. And to...
Yes, but there are members of these Azteca movements here in the United States of America, or La Raza, who say the same things about the Europeans living in California, New Mexico, Arizona, and elsewhere. They say, well, you stole the land from our Native American ancestors. Anything that happens to you is justified.
And the same with the new Black Panthers who were in South Africa last year. In the U.S., they talk about exterminating the whites. They talk about exterminating the whites in South Africa. They were there getting some sort of training from Mugabe in Zimbabwe last year. So there's a lot going on here that people need to think about. And the media is not going to tell you about this until they're forced to. So I would recommend that people start doing their own research and start looking at what is happening here.
Is there anyone listening to the program this evening? And we're going to finish this up at the bottom of the hour and move on to another topic, which is the danger of the mandatory flu vaccine that the mayor, the Napoleonic mayor of New York, Mr. Bloomberg, has taken upon himself to impose upon the people, despite all of the evidence to the contrary. We'll move on to that at the bottom of the hour. If there are any callers who lived in South Africa or have something to say, whether it's pro or con Mandela, the phone number is 855-400-7282 on the program. Let's take one quick caller, Joe, on line four. Neil, put that up for me, because if I hit it, I'm liable to lose my guest. Line four. Joe, what's on your mind from the Internet?
Michael, let me just say this as a veteran. I'm a retired Army officer, formerly with the Joint Chiefs. Number two, the only time the United States has lowered their flags to half-staff was Sir Winston Churchill, when LBJ ordered it in 1964. But Winston Churchill was an honorary U.S. citizen by an act of Congress. His mother was a U.S. citizen. This man in the White House now ordered 5 days of flags at half-staff. I resent this. My fellow veterans resent this. I have a question for you. Why hasn't anybody in the House of Representatives introduced articles of impeachment? That's my question.
Well, that's a question for another evening. There are two reasons. One, it would never happen. We have a spineless opposition party, and we have a zero tolerance for the truth from the so-called media. That answers part two of the question. I personally think that impeachment hearings would be very productive, because it would stop this man's Marxist agenda, number one, and it would stop it in its tracks. And number two, the American people would be shocked to learn what might come out at the impeachment hearings. Actual impeachment would not occur. But the truth and reconciliation that would occur during such impeachment hearings would be a tonic for the American people. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. It is uncommon for the U.S. flag to be lowered in honor of foreign leaders' deaths. It's almost unheard of. It's unheard of, except under this president, who has loyalties that are questionable. Obama issued a statement of mourning, it is true, earlier this year after the death of Margaret Thatcher, but he did not order the lowering of the American flag. In fact, the last foreign dignitary to be memorialized with the flag being lowered was Pope John Paul II in 2005. This is quite uncommon. It is true that flags are flying at half-mast in Mandela's honor in France, Canada, Norway, New Zealand, Bermuda, Kenya, and South Africa. But in America, flags are generally not flown at half-staff for non-Americans. But then again, many people have come to understand that Obama is an unusual man. 855-400-7282. Let's take some callers. Celise in Washington, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, just two quick points. One thing is, you made the comment that he changed when he became president. And that was really an enigma to me. I couldn't understand how the man that I grew up with seeing on TV with a clenched fist leading the Umkhonto Wesizwe, incredibly radical militant group of the African National Congress, how he could change like that overnight. Until I recently heard of an interview he had with someone that he had explained that peace was an appropriate tactic, that he had to do that in order to achieve what he wanted to accomplish.
Oh, you mean on the orders of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson? Or on the order of Iran today, pretending to be peaceful to get the nuclear weapon?
Yes, he was well...
Yeah, peace is a tactic to many, many extremists. I get it. Unfortunately, we have very few people who are still awake in this country, let alone vigilant. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Meanwhile, there's something going on in the Ukraine that is worth your attention. The Ukrainians are rioting against the police. They have knocked down a statue of Vladimir Lenin and smashed it to pieces. This is a very powerful image, and they bellwether for what's going on in other parts of the world. While the communists in this country are emboldened and are, in essence, erecting statues to the dictators of the world, they are throwing them down in the ex-Soviet Union republics, such as the Ukraine. What I want to do for you now is set up the next part of the show, which is a topic that I know a little bit about and one that I'm passionate about, which is the mandatory flu vaccines that have been imposed upon New Yorkers by the nanny state Bloomberg. There is nothing more political than your health. You should know the truth about flu shots. You should know who's getting rich on the flu vaccine. You should know why you may not be advised to take the flu vaccine. And you should also be aware that your child may be very sensitive to flu vaccine. Before I play my important piece on why you should not take the flu vaccine or why you should not trust your government, everything that they tell you, that is, I'd like to take one caller who has an image of this in her head that's pretty good. Susan on WABC, go ahead, please.
Hey, yes, Michael, you know, this, look, even the Centers for Disease Control says that last year's flu vaccine was overall quite ineffective because they're only guessing at what virus could be,
Right, they take two or three strains which they guess might be responsible in the future for the future epidemic. Of the many hundreds of possibilities, they guess on three, and very often they guess wrongly. By the way, there's another statistic people should know about. If I'm not mistaken, the flu vaccine was mandatory in New Jersey for several years now. It doesn't seem to have reduced the incidence of the flu epidemic at all. I'm going to ask you to listen to the next piece, which is only a few minutes long. I did it a while ago. It had been on the Drudge Report a year after it was up because it was one of the most popular items of anything I've ever done. Listen to me on the flu vaccine right now on the Savage Nation. There's nothing more political than your health, as you well know with Obamacare. You saw what is at stake. You saw that Nancy Pelosi forced it down everyone's throat because of the billions, if not trillions of dollars that are going to flow into the hands of certain individuals tied into the Democrat machine. So seeing what went on with Obamacare, can you put your logic cap on and now connect it to the government telling you you must get your flu shot? You don't see there's a profit in this, do you? I mean, they're not giving it to you for free, are they? The pharmaceutical companies are rolling in dough because of the flu shot. Now, we're going to go into the science of it eventually. We're going to have to do that. Flu is epidemic, yet more people have taken the flu vaccine this year than ever before. How do you put, you can't put two and two together, so what was the point of taking it? How did this happen? We'll talk about that as well. I'm on the side against flu vaccines. I wouldn't take it. I told everyone in my family not to take it. And if you want to comment on this, you can't, because the lines, as I knew, would be jammed up. I will give you my bias so you don't think I'm objective. I'm not objective. I can read the literature, but I'm not objective. And let me tell you something. Nobody in the media is objective. Nobody in science is objective anymore these days. It's all a business. And if you don't adhere to the party line, whether it's in climate science or in immunology, you don't get grants. If you don't get grants, you don't get an appointment, and you don't work in this town anymore. So I'll tell you right off the bat, I have a bias. I'm anti-vaccine for personal and professional reasons. So let's go into the questions that I asked. The boards are jammed out. Don't get frustrated if you can't get through. What is a flu shot? There are four different types of flu vaccines. A standard flu shot, a high-dose flu shot for those 65 and older, an intradermal administered shot for those who are needle-phobic, and a nasal spray. This is interesting. Contrary to what you may believe, the first three vaccines do not contain the live flu virus. They do not. The vaccine is made from two of the hundreds of different proteins that make up an influenza virus. And so you take two surface proteins off the virus. It doesn't mean it's live. There's no real organism there. It's a surface protein. And the scientists would say it's not possible to cause infection or disease with it. And they'll say the flu shot does not give you the flu, but I disagree with them. There's another side to the story. The nasal spray does contain live flu viruses. The nasal spray does contain live flu viruses. Dr. Dan Harper, who is against vaccinations of all kinds, said this. He said, use your head. You have 100 million viruses sprayed up the nose, along with other things like MSG and sugar, which causes inflammation. And since the virus also contains egg proteins, you run the risk of introducing an avian retrovirus, which can cause encephalitis in humans. And so here you are spraying this up into your nose, just a few millimeters from the brain, with MSG traveling across the blood-brain barrier, causing potential damage to neurotransmitters. Now, the government itself does not conclude that flu shots are 100% safe and effective. Even they say that they're not 100% safe and effective. That we understand. Yet, there are those who would argue that you should get a flu shot for humane reasons. They insist you get it. They say that anyone should get a flu shot, except people with an egg allergy. Anyone 6 months or older, they say, should get a flu shot every year. They say protecting yourself is an altruistic act. By getting vaccinated, you not only protect yourself, but you protect those around you as well. I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you at all. And the fact of the matter is, I believe that the epidemic that is out there right now indicates that the flu vaccine that has been created by the best minds of our generation, sarcastic remark, is rather ineffective. Do you believe that you want to put formaldehyde into your serum? Thimerosal, which is found in the adult version of it, that's the mercury, which is known to impair neurological and immune systems. How about detergents, antibiotics?
Savage.
Are there any flu vaccine horror stories waiting to be told on the Savage Nation? The phone number for you is 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. And by the way, if you enjoy my take on the Mandela story, South Africa, the flu vaccine, I admit that this is a little different type of show, and it's not devoted strictly to what you might expect, you heard you might expect. Would you please mark your calendars for January 1st when this show moves to prime time, drive time, East Coast 3 to 6, West Coast 12 to 3 on the best stations in the United States of America. I will be on the biggest radio stations in the country. I am the hands-down winner of the talk radio sweepstakes. You know, you may think I blow my own horn, but I don't do it often enough. The fact of the matter is, while others have been downgraded from major stations and pushed to minor signals that no one will ever listen to, Michael Savage is going to prime time on the biggest stations. Mark the date. With God's will and your listenership, I'll be here. 855-400-7282. Let's go to Florida. Stuart, you're on the Savage Nation. WFTL, go ahead, please.
Well, I'm against the flu virus. My wife and I, for the last 10 years, have not had the flu, and we never took a virus shot and immunization. And we use a solution of Vic Salve and tea tree oil mixed in, and we push it up each nostril before we leave our house each day. And we don't touch any...
No, you remember, I mean, tea tree oil is extremely antibacterial. You should know that. I don't know if it has any antiviral powers, but people should understand that the flu may... You know, it's a very interesting concept of how you get a disease to begin with. We're exposed to viruses, bacteria, and other microbes on a daily basis. We all know that. We learned that in high school. Why do you get sick sometimes and not others? Well, maybe your immunity is a little repressed, or maybe you're exposed to an extra large, you know, dose of the pathogen. When you do diminish the capacity for a bacteria to invade your body, you may also diminish the capacity for a virus to replicate in your body. It's sort of the atom bomb needed to set off the hydrogen bomb. People forget that the hydrogen bomb uses an atom bomb trigger. There's an awful lot of anecdotal and other evidence that the bacterial infection often precedes the viral infection. So you may be onto something there. It's an interesting theory that you should pay attention to. I read many things on preventing illness, and it's something I've worked at all of my life. I've been a germaphobe since I'm a child. I was raised in a germaphobic family. every mother of my mother's generation was a home doctor. They all were paranoid about their kids getting sick. Because remember, I go back a long time in history, and my mother at the time, there was a polio epidemic in New York in the early 50s, in America in the early 50s. The mothers were just in a state of shock and panic all the time. And there were many old wives' tales of what would do it, and they kept you away from crowds and this and that. Some of it was, you know, rationally based, and most of it was not. But we all grew up with a certain fear of illness and a fear of disease, and became, in looking over our shoulder, became a lot more cognizant of how to prevent disease. With me, it became an obsession, and I went into the alternative health fields, always looking outside the mainstream for the answers, as I do on the radio show, when you think about it. And the interesting thing about many viral illnesses is that they are, in essence, triggered by bacterial invasions. So if you can prevent the bacterial, the bacteria from settling in your body, so to speak, perhaps you can also stop the viral infection. That goes all the way up the viral chain, I believe, right up to some cancers. I know you're going to say, oh, what does he know about that? Well, what don't I know about that? What do you know about it that I don't know about that? 855-407-2822. Now, I am doing other things to prevent the flu, Ryan. And that includes, for example, taking large doses in the flu season of vitamin D and vitamin A to build up my immunity, or to, let's say, stimulate my immune system. Vitamin D is a powerful stimulant. Vitamin A is a very important element of autoimmunity. People don't realize that. We're all into vitamin C. I've been on mega doses of vitamin C ever since I read Pauling, which goes back to 1969. It's worked for me and my family. You can mock it all you want. I could care less. I know it's something that worked. My mentor was Dr. Robert F. Cathcart III, a medical doctor with great medical degrees, who in fact he was an orthopedic surgeon. Bob died about 5 years ago. But Bob was a teacher of mine, and Bob found, as an orthopedic surgeon, he was not into vitamins at all. He practiced in Incline Village, Nevada. He was an orthopedic surgeon who fixed broken bones, mainly of skiers. And he found that the skiers who were taking on their own, taking high doses of vitamin C, would heal faster. Their legs, their bones knitted faster. I mean, that's a well-known fact today. Even my professor, when I was working for my PhD, he was a regular medical doctor, not into vitamins at all. And he said, you know, it's interesting, but burn victims, crash victims, all heal faster if they're given mega doses of vitamin C, especially intravenously. And I'm talking back in the 70s, he said that to me. So I've been taking mega doses of vitamin C and many other vitamins for God knows how long. And I up it whenever I feel like I'm, you know, exposed or whatever. But there are other elements to, commonsensical elements that you should pay attention to in flu season. And you want to hear the simplest one is what your mother told you. When you get home from being outside, when you take your shoes off at the door, and when you please go and scrub your hands and your face with soap and water, hygiene, common sense hand washing, can go an awful long way to preventing the spread of common illnesses and perhaps even more serious illnesses. Common sense hygienic activities. You come in from the outside, you've been outdoors. You know what I mean? This is common today. Supermarkets with the hand wipes and the gloves. It's not crazy. It's sensible. Especially when we live in a nation where we are flooded with third world immigrant invaders who have no concept of health prevention. No concept whatsoever. They come from third world nations with diseases that have been annihilated in America, which are now resurging in America because of a complete breakdown in the protections of the larger population. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So we've been talking about the president disrespecting himself, the office of the presidency, and the United States of America by goofing around like a child at a funeral. Go look. Go to the Drudge Report if you want. Even though I'm not mentioned, it doesn't matter to me. I mean, you'll go to michaelsavage.com. Go to the Daily News. Has the best panel of pictures by far. The pictures are so revealing of Michelle Obama sitting stoically, looking onward with the respect that is expected at a funeral, whether it be for a local butcher or candle maker, let alone a world leader. And there's old Barry playing around with a cell phone, taking a picture of himself with the blonde leader of Denmark and the schmuck from England, the fake conservative putz from England, Cameron, who ran as a conservative and is anything but, just a watered-down you-know-what. And the pictures are very telling. And shaking hands with the Cuban dictator. The most oppressed people of the century amongst them will be the Cuban people, a story that's never told by the communist media. We're also talking about the flu vaccine that Obama, that was imposed upon the people of New York City today, I believe, by the so-called city council, a star chamber of Bloomberg. God knows what he's going to do after he leaves New York City, the Napoleon of New York City. God knows he may think he could be president. Many of these people live in a bubble. I'm sure that he looks in the mirror and says, President Bloomberg, Vice President Bloomberg. And then he says, why not? Why not? Why not? If I could impose this, these things on New Yorkers and nothing happened, why can't I do it to the rest of America? Go figure. 855-400-SAVAGE is the Savage Nation. Let's go to Australia on the Internet. Henry, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me.
What's on your mind? I understand you are an Afrikaner.
I'm an Afrikaner. I'm a 15th generation Afrikaner, French Huguenot ancestry. And I left South Africa when I was 24 just to travel at first. And as I wanted to go back over time, I managed to see that the doors are getting more shut to go back and get a job, to the point it's just no point in returning anymore to get a job or live there. You know, I'll just become one of the poverty numbers at the moment.
So you're one of the dispossessed Afrikaners who is now living in Australia, but you're still a fan of Mandela, aren't you?
I would say, you know, give a guy credit when he needs credit. Or, you know, you've got to be balanced in things. Mandela was a good leader, but, and that's the buts coming in, people need to know the whole story and not just cherry pick the niceties to, you know, with half-truths to give to ignorant people out there that don't really understand who Nelson Mandela was, the organization he started, and the government that's in South Africa now. Because the government now in South Africa is not the non-racial government that he envisaged. It's totally different in 2013. When people think Mandela, they think 1995 Invictus. Those days are long gone. And the ANC took advantage of the frail Mandela and used them as smoke and mirrors to fool the West. But I think that's coming to an end now, because with Mandela gone, focus will now shift to the true South African government.
But we have dictator types in America. We have liars. We have race baiters, race haters who have done very, very well. Jesse Jackson, for example, said that America is an apartheid nation. Would you say that that is ludicrous, or is there any truth in that? I don't know how you could say that when we have a black president, a black attorney general, and so many people of African heritage in so many high places. How could this man get away with this? Are there that many ignorant dunces in America? I wonder.
Sadly, you know, as you know, Marxism wants ignorant, gullible people.
Absolutely. 50% of the American people are not only asleep, not only dumbed down, but they could care less. If they said appropriate everything from the working 50%, they would cheer it as fairness. That's it for this moment on the Savage Nation. There's another big hour across most markets in the country. Mark your calendars. January 1st, the radio revolution begins.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome to hour number three for Tuesday, December 10th, 2013. Well, look, a picture is worth a thousand words. Here we have world leaders attending the funeral of Nelson Mandela, which we'll talk about later on, the good, the bad, and the ugly, by the way, because it's not all one way. And what did Obama do? You know, if you don't see this picture, you're blind. In the middle of a funeral, he takes out a cell phone and smiles and takes a picture of himself. He takes a selfie at Mandela's funeral with him and the beautiful president of Denmark. I swear to God, sitting on the sidelines, grimacing grimly, is Michelle Obama. Below that, it gets worse. Obama bows to Cuban dictator Castro at the memorial service for Nelson Mandela. Our president bowed down to a murderous thug in the prison camp called Cuba, a thug who runs the prison camp called Cuba. Below that is another story that should break your heart in the new America under Obama. Because of the complaints of several anti-Christian haters, known as atheists, an Air Force base has removed a nativity scene. We never could have won World War II if these atheist scum had been frightening the Christians like this. I don't know what it's going to take for the Christians of America to stand up and say, enough is enough, come and get us, because we're not taking down the nativity scene, drop dead. Today we're also talking about the flu. Don't take the flu vaccine. The dangers of the flu vaccine. What else are we talking about in the Savage Nation? So many other things. So many other things. NSA powers. Turns out that they're spying on you in ways you could never imagine. And the fact of the matter is, under Obama, the Stasi is out of control. See if you can research what the Stasi was, because your president, Obama, is now worse than the Stasi in terms of spying on ordinary Americans, the man who takes selfies. All of these stories can be found on michaelsavage.com, including chimpanzee personhood effort fails first legal tests. Guess what? Chimpanzees are not man. That's a shock. Bill of Rights to protect black shoppers from profiling at luxury stores. Well, I guess they can take in shopping carts now and go out with clothing, and no one can stop anybody, because you have a Bill of Rights. Christian statues being destroyed in Germany. Who's doing it? Gee, I wonder who. All over the world, the Christians are under attack. And here we have no one speaking for the Christian community ever. On the bottom of michaelsavage.com, Meet the Giants, a Christmas campaign to stop elephant poaching. See these beautiful creatures. Also on the right side is a pastoral photograph of a scene from Northern California that's as good as Ansel ever did. It's a picture of a small estuary, a wetland in Northern California with Mount Tamalpais in the background. I put it up on Michael Savage because it matches Ansel Adams in its quality. I'm going to ask you again two questions. How do you feel about such a narcissist leading the free world, so to speak? How do you feel about Obama snapping a selfie of himself at a funeral, smiling as though he's sort of on his own planet? What does it tell you about Obama as a president? Does it explain why the country that we live in is in such turmoil? And if you've lived in South Africa, what are your experiences? Do you want to share them on the Savage Nation? Then we go to the Obama-Castro handshake. Like several other major media outlets, USA Today tried to frame Obama's handshake with Raul Castro, the communist dictator of Cuba, as a respectful nod to Mandela's legacy of reconciliation with recent historical precedent. But one of the many truths about Mandela conveniently ignored by the media was his support for Fidel Castro and Castro's communist dictatorship. His dictatorship was not benign. Castro shot his opposition, put them in prison for over 35 years. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about our commander-in-chief bowing down and shaking the hands of this Hitler of Cuba? Obama had no problem dealing with Iran behind everyone's backs, trying to broker a nuclear deal. Who is to say that a secret deal is not in the works with communist Cuba? Were you outraged by this nod to Castro? Do you fear that just as with Iran, some backroom deal will empower Cuba, as if they are now an ally? Now, why are you calling me at 855-407-2282? I'd like to play a clip from CNN and MSNBC where they shrugged off Obama's bowing to the dictator of Cuba. Listen to clip number one.
He's shaking hands with Raul Castro.
Is it just about the moment?
This was not something that was pre-planned.
You shake hands out of respect for the moment and move on.
A human moment.
Yes. President Obama just shook hands with Raul Castro.
That's silly season. That's
the funeral of Nelson Mandela.
This is a moment of reconciliation.
President Obama just shook hands with Raul Castro.
You're really going to expect President Obama to snub Raul Castro in front of cameras?
How do you feel about this president who is so weak around dictators that he bows down to them, but like a dictator himself to the American people? He will shake hands with Raul Castro and not with John Boehner. He will shake hands with Raul Castro and spit on the Tea Party. He will shake hands with Raul Castro and spit on his opposition in this country. He will bow down to the Iranian murderers who are seeking a nuclear weapon to wipe out the Jews of Israel and spit on the American people here. He will not shake the hands of his opposition here while shaking the hands of the opposition to humanity there. How do you feel about this? If you feel nothing, then you're dead. You shouldn't even listen to the show. You have no right to listen to my show. You're wasting me. You're wasting my genius if you're listening to this show, if you don't even know what I'm talking about. I'm outraged by this. I'm just controlling it. It's getting worse by the day. When you see a picture of Obama posing with a cell phone in his hand, an iPhone, snapping a picture with the blonde president of Denmark while his wife stoically looks on at the casket and the funeral and the services. That's all you need to know about Obama. It's a child thrown into the presidency. A man who was never made for the presidency. A man who had the presidency foisted upon him by far more powerful figures. 855-407-282. 855-407-282. Did you live in South Africa? What was it like? Have you ever been in South Africa? What is it like? What are the statistics in South Africa under Mandela? What do you know about Mandela? I have the data, and you have to know about it. And I realize that many of you don't want to know the truth, because the truth is very painful. You know, it's one thing to go on and on about the good he did, but stop already glossing everything over. The man was not a saint, that's all. He was a great man and a statesman, as I said last week. Obama is the opposite. Obama is a small man and a politician. The pose for a selfie at the funeral is a picture that will live forever. A funeral for a man that he says is a great man, he takes a picture of himself with an iPhone, posing with the blonde president of Denmark, while his wife sits there staring in horror. And then look at the faces of the Africans around him. What a mockery he is of a president, this man. And then he bows down to a Cuban dictator, shakes the hand of a murderer, a Hitler. A Hitler! Raul Castro is a worse Hitler than his brother. Ask the Cubans if you don't know what's really going on there. Ask the Cubans what's really going on there. This man knows no bounds to his inability to comprehend how he is seen in the world. It's disgusting, frankly. I could ask you how you feel, and I know how you feel, and I'll take your calls, but we have an odd call just now that I didn't think would happen. Bob in Florida on WBOB. Bob, welcome to the program. What is this call about?
Yes, Dr. Savage. I'm a fan for many years now, and you've had a numerologist on your show. Two or three times I've heard him, and I believe the last time I heard him, it was about 2 years ago. And he makes predictions, and you commented that many of his predictions he makes comes true. Well, he predicted at that time something big in your life was going to happen within 2 years. And you were seeing concerned. He says, oh, my God, what is it? I'm not going to die. And he says, no, I don't know what it is, but it's going to change your whole life. Things so big, I can't tell you exactly what it is.
Oh, so you're saying when I move in scarcely 3 weeks to prime time on the biggest stations in the country is what that numerologist was predicting?
Yes, sir. That's it.
Well, thank you for being such a loyal listener. 855-407-282. Beverly on WABC, what's your topic? Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to let you know that they were saying on the news that the president did not take that selfie. He was pulled into the picture by the president of Denmark, and that's why Michelle was like, you know, she didn't like it. She just,
really, have you seen the picture itself in today's New York Daily News?
No, I did not.
Okay, ma'am, it sounds like you're a person who wants to know what's really going on, and you're fair-minded. Just take a look at the picture of Obama and see if he looks like he was pulled into the picture. His wife is sitting there stoically in shock, Everyone around them, from Africans to European leaders, are sitting there stone-faced at a funeral for a world leader. And there is Obama goofing around like a schoolboy, smiling. He doesn't look like he was pulled into the picture.
They reported, so...
The Daily News says, and the Daily News is a left-wing, Democrat newspaper. President Obama was caught committing a funeral faux pas, they wrote, snapping a selfie during Nelson Mandela's memorial service with Danish Prime Minister Helge Thorning-Schmidt and British PM David Cameron. They didn't say he was pulled into it. In fact, the follow-up picture shows stone-faced people all around them, a wife sitting there pissed off, and him goofing around with a blonde next to him holding her hand, like in a movie theater. Sorry, you can't rewrite history on this show. 855-400-7282. 855-400-SAVAGE. It's a big day, believe me. Obama will not learn from Mandela. He's incapable of it. He doesn't have what they used to call gravitas a number of years ago. That was a word that went around the media for a while. They all used it. And then it ran out of, went out of fashion. And you know, I generally try to avoid, first of all, I'm an Obama carefree show. I won't talk about it. I find it's done all day long. I'm tired of it. I try not to bash Obama because I find that limiting, boring. It limits me if I do it. I can't expand my mind if I'm just drilling down on someone, whether it's the president or someone else. My mind closes down. It doesn't make me bigger. It makes me smaller. So I try not to do it. But if you don't look at these pictures, I heard about it, then I went to the New York Daily News site, and the pictures are shocking, actually. I put them up on my website, michaelsavage.com. Go to either one. He was not pulled into a picture. I want to go back to something I touched on earlier. This is a major story. The little Napoleonic dictator of Manhattan, of New York City, rather, Bloomberg, is trying to push mandatory flu vaccines. You may think it's a good idea, but you don't know the facts. I have researched this. I have published an article on this, which is on michaelsavage.com. I'm not the only one who is saying this. If it was only me, you could dismiss me. But it isn't only me. In fact, I had an expert on in the field who agreed with me 100%. Young children happen to have a high risk of developing severe complications from influenza. That is true. But young children have a high risk of developing side effects from vaccinations against influenza. That is also true. The health department is way out of line here. And the problem here is Mayor Bloomberg's board is stocked with left-wing mayoral appointees who have conducted initiatives such as smoking bans, soda cup sizes, and they've all sailed through with little opposition. There are many risks associated with this medical procedure, including allergic reactions. The toxic mercury used as a preservative is an issue, but that's not the only issue. The bigger issue is whether a government can force you to have your child take a vaccine. That's the bigger issue. And the fact of the matter is, that's something that should bother you very much. Because today it could be the flu vaccine, tomorrow it might be something else. Maybe they want you to take an AIDS vaccine against your will tomorrow. When I say tomorrow, meaning a year from now. I would rather go to prison than let them put an AIDS vaccine in my body. I wouldn't let them do it. If it was a mandatory national vaccine for AIDS, I'd choose to go to prison rather than let them put viruses in my body that are not supposed to be there, okay? And you should do the same thing. Now, that's just in generality. Now, you want to get specific? The vaccines themselves have not proven to be effective. Why? Because the manufacturers of the vaccine only pick two or three strains that they think might be responsible for the coming flu season. These were picked last season. Now, what if the flu this season is from a different strain? Then the vaccine is completely worthless. So it could be worthless on top of it all. There's a lot of money involved here. It's not just about protecting your children. There are billions and billions of dollars involved. The important thing for you to do is research the dangers of the flu vaccine, my article, other people's articles, and come to your own conclusion. But remember, you should never let a government force you to inject your child with a potentially a dangerous vaccination. Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
People who happily embrace
Madiba's legacy of racial reconciliation, but passionately resist even modest reforms that would challenge chronic poverty and growing inequality.
Equality.
There are too many leaders who claim solidarity with Madiba's struggle for freedom, but do not tolerate dissent from their own people.
Como símbolo supremo de dignidad y de consagración inclaudicable a la lucha revolucionaria por la libertad y la justicia.
Today is one of the low points in a low presidency. Welcome to the Savage Nation. The man goes to a funeral attended by world leaders and a rock and roll singer who is sort of the zealot of politics. Bono is the zealot of politics, sticking his stupid face and eyeglasses wherever powerful people meet. I don't know what Bono was doing there, but let's put that aside. Obama goes to Mandela's funeral and poses in a selfie that teenage girls take with goofy big teeth showing and takes a picture of himself with the beautiful president of Denmark while Mrs. Obama sits there grimly to his side. And if you look carefully at the pictures from the New York Daily News on MichaelSavage.com, you'll be shocked to see the faces of the African leaders around Obama as he is acting like a child, a narcissistic child, snapping pictures of himself at the funeral. But it gets worse. Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, it gets even worse. Another low was achieved today by this low presidency. He bowed down to the Cuban dictator, the Hitler of Cuba, Raul Castro. Raul Castro may be wearing a business suit, but he's a murderous thug running a police state with concentration camps and death squads, and Obama bowed down to him and shook his hands. Have you experienced life in South Africa? Have you lived in South Africa? What were your experiences in South Africa? Because we're going to talk about, let us say, the truth about Mandela, which has been overlooked with all of this worship turning him into a saint. He was not a saint. Attention, the rumors are true. The Savage Nation is moving. Listen to me, Michael Savage, starting January 2nd at noon, right here on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
I think terror is up worldwide. The statistics indicate that. The fatalities are way up. The numbers are way up. There are new bombs, very big bombs, trucks being reinforced for those bombs. There are bombs that go through magnetometers. The bomb maker is still alive. There are more groups than ever. And there is huge malevolence out there.
That's Senator Dianne Feinstein, and I agree with her. And see, this is a strange time in my life in radio. When I start to agree with Dianne Feinstein, something's wrong. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Here we have a Democrat, a lifetime goose-stepper, or lock-stepper, whichever way you prefer, disagreeing with President Pinocchio Obama. Pinocchio Obama says the terror is down. Pinocchio Obama says the war on terror is over. Pinocchio Obama says Al-Qaeda's on the run. Pinocchio Obama says we're safer than ever. Pinocchio Obama says this. Pinocchio Obama says that. And here we have a Democrat saying terror is way up, but she's not alone. On the other side of the aisle, Republican Mike Rogers in clip 9. Listen to what he says.
We're not safer today for the same very reason. So the pressure on our intelligence services to get it right to prevent an attack are enormous. And it's getting more difficult because we see the Al-Qaeda as we knew it before is metastasizing to something different. More affiliates than we've ever had before, meaning more groups that operated independently of Al-Qaeda have now joined Al-Qaeda around the world. All of them have at least some
aspiration. All right, I get the picture. So the they're saying Americans are not safer than a couple of years ago. Feinstein on the left and Rogers so-called on the right. Now, I realize that many of you are skeptical, and as I am, I'm the skeptical talk show host, by the way. The most skeptical show in radio is mine. So I believe that the reason Feinstein and Rogers are coming out like this is because they're trying to cover their tracks in surveillance, the surveillance issue that's blowing up in everyone's face in the security industry or the intelligence world. They're trying to justify spying on us, in other words. So they're telling us that we're less safe than before, and because of that, they need to continue to spy on us. So this is the problem we're facing right now, which is just how safe are we, just how unsafe are we, and how much of our liberties are we willing to give up in order to avoid another attack? And that's always been the question going back to Ben Franklin's time and even before. I think it was Ben Franklin who said those who are willing to give up some freedom for some liberty will have neither. It's the security and liberty. That's the one. It's really well stated. I'm not Franklin, though. I don't sunbathe in the nude in Paris, so I'm not as sharp as he is in the morning, nor did I hang a kite with a key on it. There's a great article on this from the London Guardian, the Guardian London, state surveillance of personal data, what is the society we wish to protect? And one of the writers who signed a letter demanding an international bill of digital rights says our masters are in the grip of a delusionary nightmare. His name is Tom Stoppard. He's a brilliant essayist. And he said, the world of surveillance operated by the people we pay to guard us exceeds the fever dreams of the Stasi. Many of you know what the Stasi is. Most of you don't. The Stasi were the secret police of Eastern Europe who were terrifying, and they were like the Gestapo that followed World War II in Eastern Europe. And the man is asking, what in principle would justify the scope of the surveillance revealed by the Snowden leak? Would it be enough, for example, if it could be shown that a specific potential act of terrorism had been prevented by and could only have been prevented by the full breadth and depth of what we now know have learned is the playing field of the security services? So we go into that. He said nobody would be killed on the roads if the speed limit were 10 miles an hour. Flying would be safer if airport security demanded body searches with no exceptions and the examination of every item and every piece of luggage. On the matter of surveillance, though, in general, we have, without much discussion, learned to live with almost blanket surveillance by CCTV in our towns and cities. As a result, thousands of crimes, including murder, have been solved and perhaps many more prevented. Well, I would disagree with him. That's in England. Here in America, it hasn't really worked. We had the Boston Marathon bombing, so even though our intelligence services, so-called, knew that the Sonov brothers were terrorists, knew that they possibly were double agents who had done a reversal on them, they let them do the Boston Marathon bombing anyway. And we didn't give up any of our freedom for that, did we? Of course we did. So I'm not a real believer in this constant surveillance in this Orwellian police state that we're living in. In fact, it needs to be stopped. In fact, the people who are doing it need to be arrested. In fact, I don't believe a word of it. In fact, I don't believe they would stop a Muslim terrorist if they even found one in many cases. I think they're using it strictly to intimidate the entire population. In plain English, it's time to stop them. Some of them should be put in prison for what they've done. And I'm not the only one saying that. I know you think I'm the only one saying it. You're wrong. Because a congressman came out over the weekend and said that Clapper should be put in jail for what he's done to this country. You don't know who Clapper is? Well, look into it. I didn't say it. He said that. Senator Patrick Leahy, Leaky Leahy we call him, he's always been a wobbly, someone who's always played for the other side, in my opinion. He's a very powerful man now because of Obama's ascension to power. Leahy rose with him, and Leahy is one of the most deranged, dangerous men in the Senate. And he gave an address for the 2013 Human Rights Summit where he took the side of those locked up in Gitmo. Listen to clip 14.
We've yet to fully recover from the effects of the 9/11 attacks. We continue to mourn the horrific losses of innocent lives on that day. We do remain vigilant against the threat of future attacks. But as Americans, we should not ignore the damage done by some of the ill-conceived practices and policies put in place after 9/11.
I direct you to michaelsavage.com where I once did an entire program, if I can find it right on my site. I'll just direct you to it. I don't want to do it again. Here. Third, right underneath my 1970 blue XKE Savage moving to drive time, Savage on flu. Not everything government says is true. And the article is so good, and it's also an MP3 where you can listen to it on your own flu, computer. Click here to listen to Michael Savage explain why it isn't worth taking a shot with the flu vaccine. That's an interesting story that I did. And the main point is not everything the government says is true. So here it is now. It's coming home to roost. They want you to take a flu shot on a mandatory basis, not even an option anymore. I wonder if there's any money in it. Do you suppose there might just be some relationship to pushing the flu shot and a board of directors and the companies that make the flu shot and profit motive? That couldn't be, could it? Well, it's the same with the great guy with the Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett owns, amongst many businesses, a railroad line, right? And he transports whatever oil comes from Canada on his, in his tank of cars, on his railroad. He is one of the chief proponents, as I can tell, is pure speculation on my part, since I don't travel in those circles. I'm only a man sitting here. He is one of the biggest proponents of not permitting the Keystone Oil Pipeline to be created, because it would bring all the oil from Canada's Alberta's tar sands to our refineries without the need for his railroad cars. So it's a business decision. So how did he get that done? How does he continue to block the pipeline? It's simple. He's a buddy with Barack Obama, the most corrupt, divisive president in American history. And Barack Obama did a deal with him. If you support, quote, higher taxes for the millionaires and billionaires, of course he's not one of them, I will let you block the Keystone Pipeline. Don't you understand how these deals work? So now Buffett goes out and comes up with the Buffett rule. This Buffett rule, that. He himself pays 15%, so far as I know, because he receives his income as a certain kind of income, and he pays 15%, while the rest of us who make a real living pay about 39%. And so there it is. That's how the world works. Now, why am I mentioning railroads right now? Because there's a related article that came out. Farmers lose as bumper grain harvest overwhelms ships and trains. This is good news. Bumper corn and soybean harvest in the U.S. Midwest are stretching the system for moving crops from fields to markets beyond its limits. The trains are overcrowded. The highways and rivers and barges and hopper cars are overbooked in a system strained by the new demand for delivery of oil by rail. You hear this? A delay of repairs to river locks and backlogs at international shipping terminals. So our farmers had a bumper crop, which is beautiful news. Thank God we haven't had a famine. But we have so much crop that needs to be moved, and it's being moved primarily by railroads. And Buffett owns a railroad. So he's never made it so, he's never done so well. His cars are all locked up. The cost of a railroad car and using it is going through the roof. I just said to you, delivery of oil by rail, didn't I? So now you understand why it makes sense to build a pipeline from Canada to refineries in the United States of America. Now you understand why Obama is blocking the Keystone Oil Pipeline. It has nothing whatsoever to do with the environment. It has to do with paying off a billionaire crony. In the minds of anyone who could analyze these things, this year the corn crop is at a record level. Soybean, record level. Corn up 30% from last year. I guess global warming is having a positive effect. 855-400-7282. 855-400-7282. Should we pull out of Afghanistan, yes or no? Pittsburgh, W-I-L-K. Joe, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, you brought up two subjects that are near and dear to my heart. One is Afghanistan. I've always wondered why exactly we were there. The primary reason, I believe, is because if we go to war with Red China, they know that we can more easily interdict the flow of gasoline and natural gas to them in the event of a war. So
Wait. We can slow the flow of gasoline to China? How?
Because there are oil and gas pipelines that run to China through that region as well.
No. If it runs out of the Caspian Sea through Afghanistan and Turkey and some other countries to Europe, what does that have to do with it running to China?
Well, Mike, you may not be privileged to see all the pipelines. There are plenty that run towards China. And
well, you're implying that we need to be in Afghanistan to bomb a pipeline?
To help interdict the flow of oil and gasoline to Red China.
Let's just do that scenario, Joe, with drones and high-flying spy craft. What do we need a standing army to take out a pipeline?
Well, it's an implied threat. And you really don't know how tough the pipeline's going to be to take out until you go after it. And I don't know if those pipelines...
So I don't think it's worth sacrificing any more boys for Afghanistan and for the pipeline. The issue, though, is not that. The issue is whether we let Afghanistan fall to the warlords, Al-Qaeda, and they take over the country, and then they will have access to this pipeline. That's certainly something we can't allow.
Well, there's two things there. One is we've gone out of our way. This is what doesn't make sense about the government's position, our position in Afghanistan. We've gone out of our way not to change their culture, but we want them to be somehow become a Western democracy.
And
you know that Karzai wouldn't even meet with Hagel while he was in Afghanistan? Did you know that? Do you know that Obama sent his defense secretary to that third world nation that we have propped up for all these years, for what, 10 years now? And Karzai refused to meet with our defense secretary. Do you realize that? I mean, this administration is an embarrassment to the entire world. Iran refused to meet with Obama at the United Nations. This great hero now of Iran wouldn't even meet Obama for dinner when he was in New York. Now Karzai wouldn't meet Hagel. Do you have any idea what kind of disaster this is for America's standing in the world? Obama's genuflecting to terrorists around the world is shocking. Let's go to Daniel in Iowa on WQW. That's an interesting station. KWQW in Iowa. Daniel, why are we in Afghanistan?
So, Michael, when I was over in Afghanistan, I was over on the Iranian border. I was about 10 kilometers off the border. And my base had really not much to do because, you know, drug runners ran their drugs through and they continued on. Why we're in Afghanistan, we border Pakistan, we border China, we border Iran, and we're not that far from Russia. It's like a force multiplier.
Okay, so are you saying it's a forward base for American troop strength? I could buy that. I could buy that. Why don't they tell us that? It's the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Like America's founding fathers, he would erect a constitutional order to preserve freedom for future generations, a commitment to democracy and rule of law. Ratified not only by his election, but
all right, we get it. It's a eulogy. You'd expect this. Flowery things. The reason that we have to talk about Mandela's true legacy is because he was a man, not a saint. And you cannot let people become saints in your own lifetime. It's very dangerous to do so. I asked people to call if they lived in South Africa. Now we have another from another side. Stan in Las Vegas on KBET, fire away, or on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Yes, I'm just appalled that nobody's really talking about this man who is really a Timothy McVeigh on a mega scale. We're talking about while he was military commander of the ANC, looking at about 21,000 deaths from 46 to 1962. We're talking about a man, consider the fact that there's no way in hell that we would allow nuclear weapons to fall in this man's hands, and that's why that you know even though South Africa had a joint program and supplied 550 tons of uranium, that we made sure that the nuclear weapons that we had did not fall into this man's hand. And I'm just appalled. I'm very disappointed that you show any admiration at all for this guy, like a Timothy McVeigh on a large scale. 221 acts of sabotage and. And this is cowardly. This is not a freedom fighter like George Washington. This is bombings and sabotage and killing cowardly in a cowardly manner.
All right. Well, you made your point, and that was, of course, what he was in the beginning. Didn't he modify his stances as he aged?
I mean,
to the man's credit, he only served one term. He didn't become, like Mugabe, a dictator for life. He stepped down after one term, I mean, to his credit, didn't he?
You can say that appearances are deceiving.
Well, he stepped down after one term, which is something I wish Obama had done. Then the country might be safe for democracy.
I mean, I think
if the man who takes selfies at his funeral would have stepped down after one term and hung around with Bono and Katzenberg, he would be a happier man, and the country might be safer. Thanks for the call, Frederick on KSFO. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, listen, I've been a permanent resident of South Africa since 1977. I have a successful business, a mixed bag. I had some of my property seized by gangs, but Mandela's not a communist. He only got support from Castro and the Russians because we wouldn't support him. It was Jimmy Carter that changed the support of the United States. And the United States is...
So in other words, if we had dealt with him when he was a communist, he would have been a good communist? Well, what you're saying is we drove him to become a communist, is what you're saying.
No, he's not a communist now. We voted.
Well, that is correct. But wasn't he a communist in the beginning?
No, he was not. He's never been a communist.
What do you mean, no, he was not? He was a member of the Communist Party. Frederick, you're rewriting history.
The African Communist Party is a triangular relationship between KASATU, the ANC, and the SACP. He is not a member of the Communist Party.
Well, I understand that currently he was not a member of the Communist Party. But it's a well-known fact that in his early days he was a member of the Communist Party. He also espoused violence. He also did not tell his people not to follow violence. Do you know that as well?
What's this now? South Africa has always been a violent country. Under apartheid, it was violence. Whenever you have a lot of poor people and rich people.
Oh, it's poverty that drives people to violence. I was once poor. I didn't carjack and rape and break into houses. How's that possible?
Well, yeah, because you had an avenue in your education system.
Well, who gave me the education? Someone gave it to me? My 15 years of education were given to me, or I struggled and worked two jobs. Don't give me that left-wing excuse that it's the poverty that causes violence. I've heard that crap in my country since I'm 10 years old. I grew up with poor people, and none of them did carjackings, none of them broke into houses, none of them raped, and none of them murdered. I don't want to hear any more about poverty. My people worked their way out of poverty. They didn't carjack their way out of poverty. I'm sick of this. And I didn't want to get angry today, but I knew the minute I told you one scintilla of the truth about Nelson Mandela and the real South Africa, I knew the minute I said it, the real communists of the Americas would call this program and start accusing me of saying things I never said. Would Mandela have taken a selfie with a BlackBerry of him and a blonde lady at a funeral for another world leader? I don't know. I kind of doubt it.
Savage.